I went down to the river to watch the fish swim by. But I got to the river so lonesome I wanted to die, oh Lord. And then I jumped in the river, but the doggone river was dry. She's long gone, and now I'm lonesome blue.
Hello and welcome to Long Gone, the first ever episode of this new venture that I'm attempting. My name's Ryan Hetzer. The name of the podcast, Long Gone, comes from a very underappreciated and not very well-known baseball movie. When you look at the list of best baseball movies that people put out, I don't think I've ever seen Long Gone listed, but it's a good one. I think it was produced by HBO back when they didn't really produce as much as they do nowadays, and I don't really know where you can find it. I think there is a YouTube version that the full movie, but it's very sketchy quality of the picture. Anyway, there are some star power in the movie. There's William Peterson is the main player manager. He's best known for being kind of the lead guy in CSI Las Vegas, the main CSI, the most popular version of CSI. And there's Dermot Mulroney, who went on to star in some romantic comedies and such. He was in the movie as a young second baseman. Anyway, if you ever have an opportunity to check it out, it's kind of the name of the podcast, so I stick by the movie. It's a heck of a good baseball movie, minor league focus. I want to go ahead and mention right away as well and establish that I do blog for twobirdsonabat.com. It's something I've just started to do this year. They've expanded their coverage or their universe to include a number of different bloggers, and I've had the opportunity to do that. It's been a great experience. But this podcast that I'm putting out there is not affiliated with twobirdsonabat.com. It's a completely independent venture. I just wanted to establish that so that there was no confusion that perhaps someone thought that what I was putting out is part of the twobirdsonabat.com content. So now that I have that out of the way, I mean, I guess I'll just kind of talk about my motivation in doing this, sort of where I'm kind of the evolution of as a Cardinal fan. I think the motivation to do this has come really only within the past 2 or 3 years. I've been a Cardinal fan my whole life. 42 years old, so really the mid-80s teams were kind of my first memories I have. 85, 87 World Series. Don't really remember the 82 series very much, other than just highlights and things that I've seen. But 85 and 87, I have some memories. Of course, my most clear memories, though, come more in the Tony La Russa era, once he came to St. Louis and brought his winning pedigree, and then the DeWitt ownership group took over. I mean, that's really where I kind of began following the Cardinals more on a diehard basis. Of course, before that, I was kind of just a kid, and you don't tend to follow it as closely. Of course, those Tony La Russa years were a lot of fun, a lot of really good teams. And certainly my knowledge of the Cardinals during that time was at a high level. I mean, I followed the team on a day-to-day basis, would read anything that was put out. But then, you know, obviously then there was the switch to Matheny, and I would say really within the past 3 or 4 years, my thirst for being a Cardinal fan has probably increased even more. I don't really have an explanation why. I know one thing that I would attribute to is I just kind of got it started with the minor league system, really studying the minor league system of the Cardinals, mostly other clubs as well, kind of just seeing how what is coming up in the minor league system can sometimes inform opinions and decisions on the major league club was something that I really found interested in getting into. And then I guess with social media, the explosion of social media, and with what I've started to discover more and more is that there are so many different fan blogs out there on the Cardinals, podcasts, and I started getting into some of these, reading different material. Viva Alberto's was one of the first ones that I got into. I've read a lot of Kyle Reese's stuff at Birds on the Black with his prospect knowledge. And eventually, you know, it kind of led me to the Two Birds on a Bat blog. I'm sorry, the podcast, which I really enjoyed, and the different viewpoints that were brought in that podcast, and I found it to be one of the better ones that I had listened to. And so when they had put out a feeler for bloggers, I certainly jumped on the chance and have been doing that. So with doing that, with getting involved in that experience, I've just kind of thought more and more about expanding and doing more and, you know, writing more, but also perhaps, you know, dipping my foot into the podcast realm. I mean, this is probably going to be awful. The first few that I do, I'm doing these alone, and I'll get to why that is in a moment here. But, and so just kind of talking to myself, not really knowing what kind of audience will listen to this, who might be interested or appreciate what it is I have to say. You know, like I said, I'm sure that it'll be an evolution. But what kind of had motivated me, I guess, to go ahead and just get off the snide and do this is that listening a lot to, on a recommendation from my brother, I've been listening to the Joe Rogan podcast. Joe Rogan does one of the more popular podcasts out there. I think he's always, you know, around the top rated or downloaded podcast and all the internet. And I just listened recently to a podcast where he was kind of talking about that when he started his, it was just felt like doing it. He didn't have any expectations. He didn't know what it was going to turn into. He wanted to put it together and have these conversations with people and talk about things that interest him, which, you know, different than what my focus will be. But he just talked a lot about how he just had to put himself out there and do it. And that over the years that he's been doing it, it's evolved, it's changed. He mentioned, you know, going back and listening to some of the older shows. It's kind of a cringe worthy for him because the things that he's learned in the years since then. So it just kind of hearing him talk about that. I know the other thing he said was that, you know, at the very beginning that there'd be. Little technical difficulty there, 50 or 100 downloads, and that was just kind of the way it was. And now, of course, he's getting hundreds of thousands and just kind of building it up from nothing. Kind of just gave me the motivation to say, you know what, who knows, if it's something that you want to do, go ahead and do it. And so here I am. In getting back to sort of where I'm at coming from as a Cardinal fan, certainly, like I was saying, the La Russa years into transitioning to the Matheny years, I've followed the team very closely. Now, I have a bit of a unique perspective, which I've written about here and there on Two Birds and a Bat, but in my blogging, but I live abroad. I live in Morocco. I'm a educator, international educator, which is a whole world that I never knew about until I actually got into it. But essentially, there are American-style schools all around the world. And, they need teachers who are qualified. So I've been doing that now for 12 years. I've spent time as an administrator and as a teacher, and I do that in Morocco. So it's been quite a unique experience being a diehard baseball fan living abroad. MLB.tv is my best friend. Having a subscription to that and an internet connection, you can certainly watch any and all the baseball you want to. Now, the time difference has always presented a challenge. What I do oftentimes is for games during the week, I will watch part of the game when I wake up in the morning and have my coffee and kind of get ready for the day. And then people don't really talk about baseball here, so I kind of go to work and I don't really have to avoid anyone, or I just have to stay off ESPN or STL Today or any of the sites where I might see the score, and then watch the rest of the game when I get home. Now, I do often as well, day games come on at night here, so if it's a 12:30, 1:30 day game type of situation, then it's we're either 5 or 6 hours ahead here, so I'll watch the game and it'll be 6:30 or 7 my time, and I'll watch a day game in the States, but it'll be a night game for me. And then I'll also, on weekend nights, especially if it's a compelling game, a good game that I really want to see, I will sometimes even stay up until 3, 4 in the morning with the game starting here at midnight or 1, and I'll stay up and watch the games. The most interesting experience doing that was game 6 of the famous game 6, of course, of the 2011 World Series, where I was up. It was a Thursday night. You can look at the calendar if you want, but it was a Thursday night and I had school the next day, and I stayed up. As a World Series game, I wasn't gonna watch it on tape delay. So I stayed up and watched that incredible game. It's 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning. But because the game was so long and extra innings, I mean, I didn't even go back to sleep. I just, after the game was over, had some coffee and went to work. Kind of on that high of that amazing game. And I did the same thing again for the game 7. Of course, I was a little better prepared that time, though. I slept early and then set an alarm to get up and watch the game. But living in Morocco has created quite the unique kind of viewing and fandom experience, but nevertheless, I'm certainly into following the team, and I do have a baseball background. I played Legion ball, high school ball. I coached Legion ball and high school varsity and high school varsity Legion for several years in the St. Louis area. Played a little bit in college, never really was able to gain much traction, but so I do have that bit of knowledge or experience, you know, managing, putting together lineups, dealing with the personalities, but that's probably the only time I'll ever qualify myself. I don't really like when people try to qualify their opinion or that they did this or did that, so their opinion is more valid than anyone else's. But when I do think about and talk about the game, I do have some firsthand experience in terms of what it takes. You know, I've been around some guys that have gone on to play minor league ball or even big league ball a little bit. And so having that perspective kind of, for me, I think it grounds me a little bit, and just in terms of understanding how difficult the game is, how difficult it is to even get to the major leagues. And then from there, how difficult it is to stick, and just the nature of the sport and how just how tough it is. I mean, and you could say that at the highest level of any major league sport. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I think sometimes as I kind of peruse the internet and look at different opinions on the Cardinals, I do wonder sometimes if people really are giving enough thought to the idea that this is really a tough game to play, and the other teams are getting paid too. That was, I think, an old La Russa quote he would go to quite often, but he'll say something about the other teams, or they get paid too. They're professionals too. And anyway, having said that, you know, certainly I do live and die with the Cardinals. I get frustrated with the different things that go on just the same as anyone. What I want to try to do with the podcasts that I want to create is certainly have a focus on baseball, and Cardinal baseball in particular. I don't want to completely limit myself to that. I mean, may do a little bit of discussion of movies here and there, something I enjoy, books even, video games is something that at this age I still am interested in and still play, not quite as much as I used to, but I do play a lot of baseball video games, though. I do want to kind of feel free to get into some of those topics and talk about some other things other than strictly baseball, but mostly it'll be a focus on baseball, and I want to try to look at not just analyzing the comings and goings and everyday occurrences of the Cardinal Baseball Club, but also take a look at some things in the game in general. Take a look back at where the game has evolved from, and maybe also where it's evolving to, and kind of just get into some of those bigger picture conversations outside of simply focusing on the 2019 Cardinals, or before we know it, we'll be thinking about the 2020 Cardinals. Hopefully that'll be after a playoff run for this version of this team. So with the time I have left, and I want to, I'll keep my episodes to about 30-minute clips. I want to try to do a part one and a part two of this first episode. I want to keep part one at about 30 minutes and just sort of see how it goes, and then put together a part two. But maybe with the time I have left, I'll sort of set up what it is that I'd like to talk about in part two. The Cardinals have taken a lot of heat recently. They've missed the playoffs three straight seasons. They fired a manager, hired a new manager without too much of a search. Of course, talking about Mike Schilt and being hired as an interim manager and then given an extension without really looking around and seeing, you know, maybe what other options are out there. And then you have some of the personnel decisions from the front office in recent years that have not gone well. It's a interesting and funny time. And, of course, Cardinal fans are very demanding. They expect to be right there in the thick of things every year. And well, they should. That's the standard that the franchise has set for itself. It's the standard that they espouse and put out there whenever, you know, you hear guys from the front office talking. I think in some ways Cardinal fans are spoiled. I mean, you take a look at fan bases of some other major league teams, and they would love to have the experiences and the memories and the good baseball that the Cardinals have had. But certainly when you talk about this franchise and missing the playoffs for three straight years and having some of the misses, I just want to, you know, I want to kind of get into that and sort of try to peel some layers off of that and kind of unpack where the problems have really come from. For example, one thing you would have to look at is free agency. Recent free agent decisions, and either non-decisions or decisions that have been made, have really been one very serious problem and issue with the organization. So that would be an example of something that is under the team's control, they've done poorly with. There are other things that, you know, have happened that you can't put on the team or the front office. So, you know, categorizing some of these problems. So like an example of that would be, you take a look at a guy like Alex Reyes, who, you know, by all accounts, by this point in time, the Cardinals had hopes and thoughts that he would be, you know, a dominant number one type guy, you know, right there with these guys we hear about now, as Syndergaard and DeGrom and some of the other top young pitchers in the game. And to no fault of the Cardinals, the guy can't stay healthy. He's and so that's in a category where it's hurt. I imagine, you know, having another ace type guy in rotation this year, for example, with Jack Flaherty, and if Alex Reyes was what a lot of people thought he would be, I mean, look how much better your team is, my God. So that's an example of that. And then, you know, again, just kind of peeling the layers off and kind of unpacking where things have gone wrong, and trying to be fair to the organization and being critical where is needed, but then also being understanding where understanding is in order. I'm a guy who likes to look ahead, and I know the front office has taken some heat for kind of doing just that with, in terms of maybe protecting prospects. And but it is interesting from my point of view to look ahead at 2020 or 2021 and kind of formulate what a roster might look like 2, 3, 4 years into the future. So I want to spend a little bit of time on that in part two of this first podcast. As far as a bigger picture item that I want to spend a little time with, the game is kind of at a crossroads, or it's taken a lot of, I don't know if criticism is the right word, but analysis in recent years with things like the pace of play. This year, you know, all the home runs and the game is changing. It's all about the walks and home runs and on-base percentage and launch angle. And essentially the game is evolving into this where hitting and what teams look for in hitters is completely changing. Then you have things like the shift, and I feel as if the game is at a bit of a crossroads in that sense. And so just another thing I want to touch on are just some thoughts related to those topics. I do have a few. And so that'll be kind of, my bigger picture item for part two. If you've listened this far, I thank you for that. I appreciate listening. I hope that it wasn't too painful listening to someone try to wade their way through their first attempt at this. And if you enjoyed it at all, please look for part two and have a listen to that. I welcome your comments, your feedback. I'll be posting this on Twitter and Facebook, so you can reply or comment or give me your feedback on those platforms. And with that, I will end part one of the first ever episode of Long Gone, a St. Louis Cardinals and general baseball podcast. My name's Ryan Hetzer. Thank you. And hope to bring more of these to you in the coming weeks and months.
I went down to the river to watch the fish swim by. But I got to the river so lonesome I wanted to die, oh Lord. And then I jumped in the river, but the doggone river was dry. She's long gone, and now I'm lonesome blue.
Hello, and welcome to part two of episode one of podcast I'm calling Long Gone, based on one of my favorite baseball movies that is not very well known, and a lot of people haven't even seen it when you ask them about it. I want to break down each episode into two parts of about 30 minutes each. The first episode, I just introduced myself and sort of my background and kind of where I'm coming from and what I'm trying to accomplish with doing a podcast. In this episode, I want to focus on two different things, one being Cardinal-centric and the other being sort of more Major League Baseball in general. The Cardinal eccentric piece. I don't even plan to talk about this year's Cardinal team much until the next episode. What I want to talk about and look at is the fact that Cardinal baseball, it's really a fact. You can't really deny that over the past 3 years, there's been some erosion, and the club has regressed. The bottom line is they haven't made the playoffs in 3 years. There's been some poor decisions that have gone on, some head-scratching decisions that have gone on from the front office, of course, from the managerial point of view as well. And the fan base is in a strange place. I mean, it's a fan base that has high expectations, which really they're just following the lead of ownership and front office, because they always talk about having high expectations. So, of course, the fans do as well. But I think the fan base is really starting to lose its patience. Of course, you also couple that with explosion of social media. Of course, exactly what I'm doing. Even everybody has a voice if they want one on Twitter or whatnot. And so perhaps the angst is even heightened by the fact that people have all these outlets to communicate their frustration and their feelings with what's happening and what's gone on over the past few years. Of course, part of it as well is the dominance that was there for so long. During most of the Tony La Russa era, and then even the first 3 or 4 years of Matheny's, the Cardinals, you look up and the Cardinals were the class of the division almost every year, year in and year out. They were sort of the evil empire, at least in the National League Central. And so I want to start with just taking a look at what's gone wrong, what's happened in these past several years here. And I want to try to be fair to the organization and looking at it in categories. And meaning the first category would be just poor decisions, things that could have been first guessed and not second guessed after the fact. Then another category would be things that have gone wrong, but really can't be put onto the shoulders of Mozeliak or DeWitt or anyone else in the decision-making group. And then you also have the category of things that, as to be a fair fan, you would have to say that they were good moves, but didn't work out for one reason or another, not necessarily the fault of the team or the front office, but things that, you know, when the move was made, it seemed as if it was a good move. That's sort of the third category. So just going to kind of unpack these three categories a bit here. Let's start with the ugly. And, you know, these are things that, you know, either I think could have clearly been first guessed or just have been very poor decisions or head-scratching type decisions by the club. I think you look at their free agency record and free agency history, it stands out as a huge red flag, both with the players they have signed and also the players they seem to have not engaged with or did not engage with. And so when you look at Brett Cecil, Luke Gregerson, Greg Holland, I mean, these are all bullpen buys. And the Holland one was a little bit different, but these are just what turned out to be horrible free agent buys. Then, you know, you think about the free agencies that never came to pass, like a Max Scherzer. It's a very famous example, but they never really engaged. Reports since then have been that Scherzer would have been open to talking to coming to his hometown and playing, but they never engaged and never were really aggressive about it. It's strange because they make these kind of secondary hopeful signings for what's not pennies. I mean, Brett Cecil got a decent amount of money. Greg Holland got a good amount of money. Gregerson even. But yet, they're like, they don't want to dip their toes into the water for, you know, having to go to the big money. Just this past off season, we saw the same. You know, just never really seemed to seriously engage with guys like Machado or Harper. And so it's curious that, you know, they'll give decent money to these mediocre guys and who've turned out to be actually worse than mediocre in some cases. But yet, for, you know, your once-in-a-generation type players, your all-star level type players, they don't seem to want to get into that with free agency. So sticking with free agency a bit more, there's also some of the high-profile misses where they have kind of committed but then come in second place, so to speak. Or Jason Hayward comes to mind as a guy that after 1 year they went after him, they wanted him, and he chose a different club, of course, with the Cubs. David Price was another where they thought they had a good chance to sign him. Boston swoops in, apparently offers more money. So these are some high-profile misses as well. So just the whole free agency concept just hasn't worked out very well in recent years and can certainly be pointed to as one of the downturns. You don't build a club through free agency, but you need to make sound, good decisions and signings, and they just haven't done that. You could almost even extend it to the international market. There's the famous example of Luis Robert, who apparently was down to the Cardinals and White Sox. Cardinals balked at offering a bit more money, and now Luis Robert is one of the top prospects in all of baseball, tearing it up in the minor leagues this year, and certainly would be make a formidable prospect trio if he were to be in the Cardinal organization with Gorman. And sorry about that. Had a little technical difficulty, still trying to get all this sorted out with microphones and so on. And so that's moving on to another topic in the ugly category. It's just the being very slow to respond to a number of different situations. It seems like the organization just drags its feet and takes forever when a situation to, you know, the educated observer is just clearly not working out. And I think you could go into a number of different examples. I wasn't going to talk much about this year's team, but the most recent example, which I will mention, you take a look at Harrison Bader and his situation this year. It was so clear that the guy needed to go down and get his swing right and get the pressure off. It was clear for 2 months, I would say. And they just kept dragging it out, kept him up, kept allowing him to struggle. And then, you know, finally they do it, and it actually turns out, what seemingly right now turns out to be a good thing. He goes down, he got hot, got his swing right, and, you know, he's only been up for a couple games, but he does look to have a better approach at the plate. Now, we'll see if that pans out, but it was just, and that's just one example, where these things that are going on and the Cardinal organization just seems to bleed it dry. If I, you know, go back and, you know, Mike Matheny, there's another example where I think the writing was on the wall and they just let it drag out. And you know, there are certainly other examples that exist where it just seems as if, and I'll give another one again from this year, is, and they're this way with injuries sometimes, is, you know, you've Yadier Molina, who clearly wasn't swinging with authority for a good week or so. Then he goes down, goes on the IL for just, I think, the minimum 10 days or so. And he comes back, and you could see he's still not ready. He still couldn't swing with authority. And ends up having to go on the IL for a longer extended period. Well, you think about, had he just gone on the IL when the original injury was apparent, it would have done away with 3 weeks of messing around that got added on to, you know, the eventual time in which he could return. And so, I mean, you could see that he was compromised. You could see as soon as they mentioned the injury and that his hand was bothering him, you could tell. And yet they just drag it out. And so it just seems like a theme that continues to pop up time and again. Now, in continuing to look at these different categories, you know, you do have situations where the move is solid, but perhaps just hasn't worked out for reasons that are beyond control of the organization. And, you know, yes, you could go back and second guess these moves, but if you're really being sort of genuine and fair, you would have to say that the move was a sound move at the time and just for whatever reason hasn't worked out. In that category, you know, you have certain trades that if you take a look at, it's just, you can't quite put the blame on the organization for the move that they made. The biggest example that would come to mind would be trading for Marcell Ozuna. That was something they needed to do at the time. Has it worked out perfectly? No. You know, you have Alcantara was an all-star who they traded. Gallen is another promising pitcher, although he was surprisingly dealt to the Diamondbacks at this trade deadline. But it was the sound move at the time. Now, you can say what you want about Ozuna. Some would say, well, you know, you only had him for 2 years. Now you're going to potentially and probably, you know, have him walk in free agency. But it was a needed and sound move at the time. Ozuna's first year wasn't stellar. He was dealing with a lot of injuries. You know, of course, this year he has been very good, although also suffered and missed a fair amount of time with an injury. So this is the kind of move where, you know, people can go back and second guess it. But at the time of the move, it was logical and seemed as if it was, you know, a good move. And so then you have the category of things that just really aren't at all the fault of the Cardinals, but you can't even really second guess. It's just almost in the category of bad luck. And really there you're thinking more about injuries. Alex Reyes's name comes to mind as a huge one. I mean, here's a guy that you're hoping, and projections, you know, are clear that this is a future number one or number two. And to not, you know, to hope for that or to expect that and to not have it, there's just nothing that you can do, nothing that could have been done differently. And that's true of some of the other depth that the Cardinals were planning to have this year. Look at a player like Austin Gomber, who very well could have made an impact with some of the rotation issues. I mean, he's been hurt. I would say you could also apply this category to a thing like the Goldschmidt trade and then extension. Now, he's certainly in some ways turned his season around. And, when, at the end of the day, his numbers will probably look pretty good by the end of the year. But certainly the first half was not very good. You would have to say that his overall numbers, I mean, you just look at WAR alone, and I saw something the other day where Carson Kelly's WAR is higher than Paul Goldschmidt's. That's something where, I mean, making that trade, adding that huge bat, that perennial all-star to your team, and then extending him, you can't, I guess there's some people that would find a way to, but that's just not something you can criticize. It's not something you can say, oh, well, that should have been expected. It was a sound, excellent baseball move. It just, so far, hasn't quite worked out in the best possible way, I guess you could say. And so that's another category of things that I think fans like to kind of go back and second guess, or, you know, hindsight being 20/20. But to be fair to the organization, there are some things in this category as well that you just can't predict and you just can't know are going to occur. And a lot of these, could be in the category of injury. And I don't, you know, I also wouldn't say that all injuries or all situations are unforeseeable. You know, that's not the case either. I'll give the example there of a Carlos Martinez and his situation, where, you know, on one hand you could say, well, you know, what could the Cardinals do? You know, how can you know that Martinez wouldn't give them 200 innings this year? That's just bad luck. So I wouldn't put that in that category, though. Whereas, you know, maybe Reyes or Gomber, I would. For Martinez, oh, you kind of have a track record here with this guy that, you know, you've seen he's had over the course of a few years troubles with his arm fitness and staying strong. And so that's where, you know, perhaps there's something they could have done with him differently. You know, deal him a couple of years ago or a year ago when his value would have been much higher. And so there are those situations as well. Trying to keep this to 30-minute episodes, I want to move on then from looking at the troubles of recent Cardinal moves and just spend a few minutes on Major League Baseball in general. And what I wanted to talk about was the fact that there's a lot of just criticism of the game and a lot of talk of changing the game in different ways. And mainly a lot of the criticism centered around pace of play and the amount of time that games take to play and how they're sort of losing the younger fan base. Now you also then have different kind of things played around with, like eliminating the shift. There's talk of the DH moving to the National League. There's talk of even different things like when the game goes to extra innings to start each inning with a runner at second base. These are all different ideas, but the tone or the message is that the game needs to evolve. It needs to change. And I'm someone who kind of pushes back against that. When it comes to pace of play, I mean, I'm an adamant believer that there's really one main issue that I would take a look at if I was running things, and it's the strike zone. These umpires, you watch so many games where these umpires force pitchers to keep their pitches with a postage stamp size zone. And you watch games, it's like, where is this pitch? Where is that pitch? And to me, call strikes. And I'm not advocating they go Little League World Series on us and start calling pitches 8 inches off the plate, 12 inches off the plate. But call the strike zone. Again, I mean, so many of these games, and I'd love to be able to, I'm sure there is a metric or some kind of stat out there, but you look at some of these games that do go 3.5, 4 hours, it's often attributable to the zone of the pitcher. When I used to coach American Legion or high school ball, you could almost see a game evolve and develop where within the first 2 innings, if you've got an umpire that won't call the strike zone, you kind of know. You can see, this is going to be a 14-12 game today. You can almost pick it up in the early innings. And I mean, that's high school and Legion ball. It's not big leagues, but I really think if they would not expand the strike zone, but call the strike zone the way it's written in the rule book, it would be the number one thing that would help pace of play. The other thing is that I think could be done, which is I don't think they should mess with the shift. I think you have to let the game evolve on its own. And if teams want to continue to produce all of these shifts, well, then you have to start to have hitters that will adjust and hit the ball against the shift or become better bunters and bunt the shift. I mean, that will evolve just as the shift evolved if you just let the game play out. I don't think they should start tinkering with different things. Really feel that would be a mistake. The main thing I wanted to talk about there was my pace of play take, my pace of play idea. I just think calling the strike zone, and even if you have to do it electronically, with this talk in recent months of moving to an electronic strike zone, even if that's the answer, whatever you have to do, I think that is the key to improving your pace of play. And I think they have to continue to market better too to younger viewers and really pump up their star players better. But that's probably a conversation for a different day because I'm nearing the end. I hope you've enjoyed this first episode in two parts. It's probably not very good. I'm just trying to start this. I don't have experience as a broadcaster. I'm just sitting and talking about baseball and the Cardinals because it's something that I like to do. And so I'll continue to do it, but I hope you did enjoy. Your feedback is welcome. The next episode, I want to focus more on the 2019 version of the St. Louis Cardinals. I did touch on a few things today that I wasn't exactly planning to, but I want to kind of dive a little bit deeper into this year's team and just talk about some of those things related to the 2019 club. I hope that you've enjoyed parts one and two of episode one, and I hope that you will continue to listen to new episodes that I put out. Thank you. See you next time.